And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Tuesday, July 21st. Not many days left in the month of July, as August is just around the corner, and it's going to start feeling like late July and early August, as we have some pretty hot weather coming into the area. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director, Bridget Riedel. A nice, refreshing day out there today, Bridget. Doesn't feel like the end of July, does it?
Wake up this morning and think, wow, it's a little bit cooler out. And tonight we're actually looking at some lows below 60 degrees overall. I think a lot of windows are going to open up and air conditioners turn off just for a brief while.
Exactly. Save a little bit on the electricity bill, as we do have a nice, refreshing Canadian air mass. Now, along with that, unfortunately, we are going to see some periods of smoke again pouring back down from Canada as we get our upper level winds in out of Canada. But that will change as we head towards the end of the week. That's when we'll start to see warmer weather come in. But today is going to be, it's a breezy one out there. We got northwest winds gusting over 30, and currently temperatures in the mid 70s across most of the area. We'll warm it up into the upper 70s, and we'll have those northwest winds gusting over 30 at times. Now, as we head towards evening, those winds will start to decrease as high pressure builds in. That will lead to clear skies, mid 50s. I wouldn't be surprised to see a few low 50s overnight tonight with light north winds. And then we'll start our warm-up for the rest of the week, warming up a little bit each day. Low 80s on Wednesday, mid-upper 80s on Thursday, right around 90 on Friday. Now, we've got a pretty dry-looking forecast. In fact, I put an article up on our webpage, WDAYRadioNow.com, and I don't see much precip. We're in D1 drought conditions right now, and I wouldn't be surprised to see that expand across the FM area because there's not much rain over the next week to 10 days. The only chance I see is Friday night into Saturday. As even hotter air builds into the area, we could see a few thunderstorms on the cusp of that heat dome, but mid-upper 90s over the weekend. So some true heat, dangerous heat could be on the way as we head into the weekend. But again, I think the bigger story, especially for our ag community, we're not seeing much, if anything, over the next week to 10 days. And I don't see really any change in that, quite honestly, until the very end of the month into the first week in August.
As the drought monitor expands, and when you look at it, there is, in fact, that D1 drought that's right there in the central part of the Red River Valley, and then a greater portion of northeastern Minnesota. Also, we've watched the abnormally dry area of western North Dakota expand, which really is bridged by the Missouri River. Central North Dakota has held its own just due to a lot of moisture happening during planting. You know, that Bismarck area, they actually got stuck during planting, and you never hear that happen out there. What this will change, a couple of things. We will see less incidence of white mold, potentially, in dry beans, soybeans, as well as sunflower. We are seeing some numbers down in Cercospora with sugar beets because we don't have the dampness. I'm not saying that this is going to solve all our problems, but maybe it knocks off one spray for Cercospora, something like that. We've probably lost the top 30 bushels off of our corn crop at this point for those who are in those drought regions. Mm. Soybeans and dry beans seem to be holding their own. A lot of sunflowers are sitting at flowering, a bloom, I should say, and also some later planted ones at pre-bud. What I do think about here, especially, is the wheat. When we had those high temperatures, we saw wheat in the flowering stage. It may have stressed the wheat to the point that not only did we get a higher protein, but we may have knocked off some of the flowering, and the same for canola. I think the canola yield is going to take that as a hit overall because of the high heat during the critical period of flowering. Where does that lead to for the rest of the crop? You know, a lot of old timers will tell you that if you count fog and go 90 days forward, we could get rain. If that's the case, we may be looking at a very wet harvest situation with a mediocre crop. And nobody really likes how that is looking. If you have some crop reporting, it would be excellent to hear from you. You can reach us on the JLA insurance phone line of 701-293-9000. As I mentioned yesterday, there are ways that you too can become a responder and share not only your crop reporting, but also weather conditions to be a part of the U.S. Drought Monitor. And if you're curious what those details were, you can email me, ag@flagfamily.com. Be happy to share. Dina's weather at flagfamily.com. And our live stream brought to us by Lighthouse Commodities. You'll find that on Facebook, YouTube, and Acres TV. Acres TV, especially, that's getting a lot closer. You're going to be able to see us down at Baltic, South Dakota. I'll be there for the Ag PhD Field Day on Thursday, July 30th. Lots going on at that event. Again, it's all free. Free food, free parking, free information. But it is worth your time to take the drive down to Baltic and see all of the new demonstrations and equipment, discussions about cropping systems, and so much more that can impact your farm. Speaking of impacts on the farm, folks have so many opportunities for education over the summer months. One of them is coming up on August 6th and 7th, and this will be at Craig LaPlante's farm at Crookston. Ray Archuleta will be there with a nutrient management soil health school. And this is being held in conjunction with the Minnesota Health Coalition. If you're interested in attending, please go ahead and just drop me that email, ag@flagfamily.com. I'll make sure to get you all the right details for it. Also, Common Ground, which is a group of North Dakota volunteers, women in agriculture who are passionate about sharing their stories and connecting with you, the consumer, are going to be hosting Not a Latte, their summer event series. And the next time you'll be able to have those soy lattes will be in Grand Forks this Saturday, July 25th at the Town Square Farmers Market. That'll be from 9 to 1 in the morning. So stop by and visit with the volunteers. Talk about the impact of soybeans on this region. And really important, we are at a critical shortage of type O blood. So next Tuesday, I will be live at West Acres doing a remote there while we are hosting the Save Our Summer Blood Drive. We're going to be a part of promoting that, making sure that people are stopping by to donate their pint. We are at a critical shortage, particularly of type O blood. Type O is the universal donor. And so we are very much looking for folks with type O who can stop by. I myself am a regular blood donor, and hopefully I'll see you in the chair next to me as we donate. Again, they'll be together next Tuesday. If you can't make it Tuesday, the blood drive goes Wednesday and Thursday. That'll be 11:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. at West Acres. So always lots of big opportunities to get together and do multiple things going on in the region. So when you talk about what's new again, how about something that's really old? And that would be the USA's oldest continuous farmed land, which is still producing after 400 years. This is in James City County, Virginia. And archaeologists and historians have been able to trace back records as well as finding artifacts on the land that show a shift from military presence, so things like swords and armament, to agricultural tools, hoes, rakes, and shovels. And they were using the metal from the military action to be used as far as farm equipment is concerned. And those records point to the year 1619 as probably when the farming began. Might even have been a little bit earlier. So this is continuous cropland for more than 400 years. I don't know if we can say that it's been the same ownership of family in that time, but nonetheless, it's been there and things have been going on for quite a while. In fact, some of these fields were part of a battle during the American Revolution. In July of 1781, the Battle of Green Spring was fought on this landscape, and that was just months before the decisive victory at Yorktown. So imagine being able to stand and look across your land and know that it has seen far more history than many people would have ever thought possible. So we're a young country, but yet there are some aspects that have been going on for quite some time. Again, that's America's oldest farmland out in Virginia. I mentioned family farms in that news story because there's a lot of them out there, and one is coming up next as our guest. We're going to visit with the gentleman from, I believe it's called the Oddie family, O-D-D-E. They are from Aberdeen, South Dakota. They have a long history with Steiger tractors. We had a fantastic conversation yesterday with Dave Majerus, who was an engineer at Steiger for many years before he went to Prairie Ag out in West Fargo. And it was fascinating to hear him talk about what it was like to be building those Steigers from the ground up. Well, the Oddie family, they are part of the Steiger Heritage Club, and they're going to be joining many at Rolog over Labor Day weekend, and they're going to be sharing information during the Western Minnesota Steam Threshers Reunion. And we're going to talk more with this family, not only Parker, his grandpa and his uncle, about having Steigers on the farm, being a part of the club, what they're going to be doing out in Rolog, and so much more. So stay tuned. We did reschedule this. Originally, we planned to talk to this family, but President Trump came to Maduro one day, and well, we didn't get a chance to visit then. So we're going to do it now after the livestock market from the American Ag Network. If you are thinking about making some changes when it comes to drainage on the farm, maybe it's taking care of a field. You know, right now that it is a little drier out, what a great time to get that done. If you are thinking, man, every year my farmyard has a wet hole, a sinkhole, one of those spots that we can never get to dry out, and we've put about 32 truckloads of gravel there and it's never helped, maybe Landmark Companies is who you should talk to and see what you could do for a fix. You can talk to Blake Sunday over there at Landmark. They are, in fact, showing us precision drainage with proven results, and you can reach them, landmarkteams.com, or just drop me an email, ag@flagfamily.com, and I'll put you right in touch with Blake Sunday of Landmark Companies. So it is a double feature of Steiger Tractors this week. Yesterday, an opportunity to visit with one of the former engineers at Steiger Tractor from 1974 until the early 80s. Today, we get to visit with farmers who use those Steigers on a regular basis. And we are visiting with a farm family from Aberdeen, South Dakota, Parker, Grant, and Kirby. And Parker, did I get it right when I said the Audi family?
So it's actually pronounced Odie, but...
Odie. Okay.
Yep.
I didn't want to get it wrong either way. So here we are with Odie. Got it.
Yep.
So please tell us about your operation and who's joining you today.
Well, we're here at L&O Acres here on our farm. I'm joined with my grandfather, Greg, and Kirby, my uncle. And I guess my grandpa, he's going to be the one talking mostly here about our operation, how it started and everything else. And then Kirby can kind of take over on the I would say, the last 10 to 20 years or so of our operation here. So
that sounds excellent. I'd love to visit about that. And while we're talking, if those who are watching on our live stream brought to us by Lighthouse Commodities, we're going to show some of the pictures that were shared with us by the Odie family. It's a pretty spectacular lineup with Steiger. But first of all, if I could hear from Kirby, tell us a little bit about your operation and its history.
Hi, so this is Kirby. I guess I'm kind of the main guy with running the operation now, currently with Parker working with us, and we've got a great group of employees. We're currently farming soybeans and corn, and we're using 8 Steiger quad tracks. And I've been part of the farming operation my entire life. It's always been kind of a natural thing for me to be a part of. And the heritage with Steiger Tractors was very influential to our operation with my grandfather and helping, you know, develop the farm that we have now. Having a four-wheel drive articulated tractor made our operation so efficient over the years, and we've just proven to grow off of the platform that was started back in the Steiger Boys' shed in Minnesota, and now what it is with Case IH, you know, to give thanks to them to carry the brand on and to make it such an incredible tractor, even more incredible than it ever was, you know. But I guess, you know, with our operation, we've been farming for 51 years and started with our grandpa, my dad's dad, Leonard, and continued on with my dad, Greg, and then my brother and myself. And now my nephew Parker's involved, and he just started farming here in the last year. Got him going farming some soybeans and corn, and I've got 3 young kids at home. I got 2 boys and a girl, and they're pretty much as excited as we are with farming. So we're really excited to bring them up into the ranks of farming with us, and hopefully continue on and grow the brand. As you know, there's a lot of passion involved with Steiger Tractors, and we feel like we're just as passionate, if not one of the most passionate people in the operation that supports it. So,
well, I'll tell you what, as someone who grew up not that far from you, I grew up in the South Central part of North Dakota, and I remember coming into Aberdeen and seeing the sign for L&O Acres on north on Highway 281. And my guess is that when it comes to using Steiger, weren't always a corn and soybean operation. Perhaps Steiger was very helpful in some years with a lot of wheat and sunflowers.
Yes, so that would be something my dad would be able to weigh in on with the sunflowers and wheat. More or less, when I entered the operation, we were split a third and a third and a third between wheat, soybeans, and corn. And so I know he'll be able to take a moment to kind of talk a little bit more about before my time with the farm. But, you know, with myself personally, my passion with Steiger tractors, I remember as a kid riding around the tractors with, you know, my dad, my brother, and some of the other guys that were here with us and being a part of that old steel and also getting into the era of, you know, trying to help develop this tractor into, you know, something that's still the latest and the greatest and the best on the planet, because we still believe it, you know, it's the best four-wheel drive tractor on the planet. And so I guess I the role that I've played more or less is probably more with the current tractors. I know Parker is really into the old stuff, and I am as well, but that's kind of his wheelhouse, and mine is kind of the newer stuff with dealing with some meetings with KSAH and the new. I had a pretty decent influence with the green 785 tractor along with the Steiger family. So just really proud to be able to continue the legacy and just, you know, make it something that's even better moving forward for future generations to come.
I am excited to talk about that, the Steiger green 785. So let's talk to your dad just a little bit. What was the spark that first brought Steiger to the farm?
Well, my dad's history goes back a long time with Steiger tractor to the beginning. My dad went to work for Melro at Gwinner at the invite of Gene Dahl as a purchasing manager, and they connected there in 67 and 68 with Les Melro and Sil Melro and that group of guys before they decided to bring the Steiger tractor out of the barn and into the factory in Fargo there. And that was my dad's connection. And my dad got started there in 1971 as the vice president of marketing with Steiger. So he traveled the world selling tractors in South America, Australia, Europe, just Hungary, to name a few. And I was sort of part of that whole thing as a kid growing up. It was just a dream to watch these guys. I mean, like I mentioned, Gene Dahl, Les Melro, Sil Melro, and Earl Christensen. And there's a long name of guys, you know, that had a big part in getting this tractor off the ground in the exciting days of beginning of the Steiger tractor in Fargo. And I actually worked up there in the summer of 74 in the factory. And got interested in farming at that point in time. I'd growing up in town, but through my dad's association with Steiger and that crew there, and I got interested in farming. And dad started a farm here in 1978 to sort of transition in his way out of the Steiger years. Things were sort of tough. My dad was there when the stockholder decided to build the new plant in Fargo, which is still being used today by Case IH. And very successfully, and that's when the farm economy crashed hit, and Steiger was sort of forced to sell out, and that's when dad transitioned from being actively working with Steiger in the plant or as a vice president of marketing to starting his own operation in 1975.
He was there in the golden years, and actually you spending your summers there, and like you said, 1974, those were the years that farm equipment could kind of do no wrong. There was so much change and innovation, especially in this region, not only with Steiger, but what was happening at the Melro Company, Wishick Disc, Wilrich, all sorts of brand names were really coming online. So before we take a break for the news, gotta ask, Grant, what was your favorite project to be working on when you spent that summer at the plant in Fargo?
Well, I was just learning how the tractors were built. I worked outside in the assembly line. All the cabs were pre-assembled, the front frames, the rear frames, axles, and me and one other guy, we hauled all of the components in and ordered a certain doors as they went down the assembly line. And we were building tractors for Case IH, Alice Chalmers, Co-op out of Canada. It was just, it was just something you never forget. It was a fun deal. Those were the glory days, I think.
Those were huge days. My dad always admired the Steigers. We didn't have one on our farm. We had a couple of versatiles as my brothers got into the operation, but Steiger name means a lot, as well as that iconic Steiger green color. And when we return from the news, we're going to continue to visit with the Odie family down near Aberdeen, South Dakota. We want to talk about that wonderful Steiger green 785, why they've kept Steigers on the farm for so long. And again, we're rolling some photos on our Lighthouse Commodities live stream for those who are watching. We'll return in just a little bit. The older I get, the more I appreciate classic farm machinery, and a classic name is Steiger. Today we get the opportunity to visit with the Odie family from near Aberdeen, South Dakota. We're talking about the Steiger tractors that have long been a mainstay on their farm, starting out with Grandpa, who was not only part of the Steiger company, but on through the generations as they've continued to farm with those Steiger tractors. And I do want to ask, and I'm not sure which of you wants to take this question, but why have you continued to keep Steiger on the farm all through the years of the green Steigers, all the way through the integrations with Case and the current Quadtrax?
Well, Bridget, this is Greg again. Just in our blood. I mean, we lived and breathed the Steiger heritage, and even still do it, even passed back to the barn series. And it's still the best tractor in the world. So our operation's meant to be run efficiently, and you know, that's the tool that we use. And to Case IH's credit, you know, we were pretty resistant to the change. I mean, our first tractors that we got from Case IH, they wanted to paint them red, and we said, no, keep them green. And they did that for a couple of years, but then that sort of got old, and then we sort of with them, and then that sort of had to move on to the new phase of life with Case IH and Steiger. But Case IH has done a tremendous job of keeping the Steiger heritage and their and everything that goes along with it going right along with. They realized the value. I think a year or two there, they dropped off the Steiger a little bit, and they heard about it from farmers that we better ride the Steiger wagon as long as they can, and they sure have. They've done a good job and still building a great tractor, and we really enjoy working with Case IH now. I know Kirby works closely with them, and also with Titan Manufacturing, or Titan Machinery, Dave Myers, BJ Knutson, and Dave Muckabee on. You know, it's just all about relationships, I guess.
That's truly the way farming is built, is all about relationships. And so, Kirby, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned the, some people would call it retro or vintage, but bringing back the iconic Steiger color on the 785. And was that the tractor that I saw at Big Iron last fall with Doug Steiger's signature on it? And is that now on your farm?
Hey, Bridget, so this is Kirby again. So we don't currently have it yet. They were delayed on getting the tractor to us. It was supposed to be a June delivery. We were excited to try to get it to Rolog, and then they told us they had to delay it a little bit for some testing purposes. But our good friends at Titan and our friends with Case pulled some strings, and they're going to make sure that tractor lands at Rolog this year for the big event. So we're really, really excited about that. And yes, we're very excited to have Doug's personal signature on the side panel of that tractor.
I've had an opportunity to visit with the author of the upcoming Steiger book. I'm sorry, I have to think of his name now. We just talked not that long ago. And when we talk about Steiger and that book that's going to be coming out in October, have you guys been interviewed? Are you interviewed for it? Will you be a part of that book as well?
I don't think I've heard of the book, actually, Bridget. The guys that I'm sitting with, they don't think they've heard of it either, so...
Ah, okay. There's a whole lot of history going on. Hold on. I just interviewed him not that long ago because he wrote the Snoopy and the Spy book. It was Lee Clancher, excuse me, and he writes a lot of tractor history books. So when I just put in my pre-order for it, and it's about a 500-page volume dedicated to the history of the Steiger family and the Steiger tractors that were built. And I'm going to take a guess that your Grandpa Len will be featured in that book as well as they review the history of it. And speaking of history, you made mention of the Steam Threshers reunion at Rolog. And you're going to get the 785 there. Are you guys loading up some of your more vintage tractors? And right now on our live stream, we're showing a line of about 5 or 6 vintage Steigers going down the road. And I'm wondering if all of those are eventually going to get loaded and hauled to Rolod for this year.
So this is Parker. Yes, we plan on bringing a few of our tractors there, especially the Spirit of 76 tractor that should be in that photo that you're talking about with the lineup of tractors. We plan on bringing that one. And then we have our 50th anniversary Steiger tractor that we got in 2008. We plan on bringing that as well, for sure. And possibly another one, too, but I guess we haven't really decided for sure whether or not we are going to yet. So, but for sure, those two.
So do these tractors that you have at home, first of all, are they Panthers? Which tractors are they that you have? I know you mentioned the Spirit of 76, but then additionally, do they still get used on a regular basis? Early on, I heard you talk about the quad tracks on the farm, but do the older ones still get pulled out as well?
So we don't use the older ones as much anymore. We really don't use them at all at this point. We're actually still working on it, but we're building a kind of a showroom out in front of our farm at the moment. We're going to park all of our tractors out there, all of our older tractors, the Steigers and all that. So we're going to park them all in there on display, and there's a bunch of windows. You can see it from the highway. We're going to have it lit up at night and stuff. And I would say so all the models that we have a Series 1 Bearcat, mm-hmm. and then we have a Series 2 Super Wildcat. We have a Series 3 Tiger ST450, and then that Series 2 Turbo Tiger Spirit of 76 as well. And then the 50th anniversary tractor and whatnot. So we plan on eventually, growing our collection a little bit more as the years go by, but yeah.
On our live stream, we currently have the Spirit of 76 tractor. Did that come as a special paint job from the factory, or was that done specifically by those who owned those tractors?
So in 1976, that tractor came from the Fargo factory and was painted in a paint booth nearby from the factory, from what I understand. I don't know exactly the story on it, but yes, that's how it was originally in 1976 when the tractor was brand new.
For those who haven't had a chance to tune in yet, you can see it on the Lighthouse Commodities live stream. Literally in its red, white, and blue livery, it is a Tiger II. It does say Spirit of 76 on the hood, and I would have a guess that it probably makes some very proud appearances in parades from time to time. Would I be correct, gentlemen?
Yes. Yes, you are correct. We actually just recently put it in our 4th of July parade here in Aberdeen on Main Street, which was very cool to see.
I'm just looking forward to the showroom being done because I get to Aberdeen enough. I'm hoping that I, can cash in my ticket to stop and see all the lineup. Currently on the live stream, you will see that there is a lineup of about 5 tractors here. We've got the Bearcat, the Spirit of 76, the Tiger 2, and then we move into, when Case took over, and you can see that slope hood on the 535, and then we went to the red. And so you guys have a mix of everything. You've got the vintage color, you have the Case IH red, and now we're back to a vintage color. So I would venture a guess that you've never been disappointed by what was under the hood, no matter what the color was on the tractor.
Oh yeah, for sure.
are there any other tractors of note in your collection, whether they're Steiger or anything else?
I wouldn't say no, not at the moment.
Color buzzer. Your little Case tractor.
Oh, I got that. So there's a tractor show actually that happens in Andover, which is not too far away from Aberdeen here. It's just straight east of Aberdeen past Groton. And mm-hmm. I guess I do have a smaller Case tractor. It's a 1957 Case 300 triple range. I actually won that at the Andover threshing show there. I won it when I was in 7th grade. And yeah. I've had it ever since, and I bring it there every year and put it in the parade there along with our Steigers. We usually bring a couple Steigers out there every year. So,
but I tell you what, I can see the connection now because if I'm not mistaken, that Andover show, the Anderson family helps put that on, but they're also a big showman when it comes to being up at Rolog as well. So maybe that little case will get to go to Rolog too.
Yeah, I might have to bring it up there.
the way it stands out for me with the Anderson family is I believe Corey Anderson's dad might still have it. It was the Stanley Steamer car, and I remember seeing that car driving around at Rolog a couple of years ago. So, gentlemen, I very much look forward to seeing you at Rolog this year. I hope I get a chance to spend a full day there and see your collection. Do you have any of the details of what the Steiger Heritage Club has for you as far as dates, et cetera? Because if not, I can probably bring those up for us as well.
I guess
everything.
Yep.
Okay.
It's over Labor Day weekend, as far as I know.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yep, it's over Labor Day weekend, and that'll be September 4th to the 7th. Steiger is the feature this year on Machinery Hill, and I have a feeling there's going to be quite an awesome collection, not just what's going to be coming from the Odie family, but others in the region as well. And we look forward to seeing your Steigers because from all the pictures I can see, they are in immaculate condition. So, Parker, thanks for the time today to line everybody up and give us a chance to visit.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it as well.
All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to have a recap of what promises to be possibly some of the hottest weather we've seen so far this summer. We'll let you know how hot we're expecting it. Coming up here in just a few minutes. Hey, welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. 1:52 in the afternoon and temperatures outside in the mid-70s. We'll make it into the mid to upper 70s across much of the area today. Some free air conditioning from Mother Nature. It really feels nice out there. Humidity levels are low. A little bit of a breeze out of the northwest between 20 and 30. But even those winds will calm down as high pressure builds in as we head towards evening and overnight. And that'll lead to a nice refreshing overnight, mid-50s. Not even some low 50s, I'm sure, will pop up. And then we're looking at slow warming for the rest of the week with low 80s on Wednesday, mid-upper 80s on Thursday, and right around 90 and windy on Friday, and then a hot weekend, mid to upper 90s across the area over the weekend. And if you didn't catch it early in the show, I don't see a lot of rain in the forecast for the next week to 10 days. There's a slight chance Friday night into Saturday morning as the hot air starts to build in, but don't expect much out of that. But, you know, you get caught under an errant storm as that hot air builds in. You could pick up a quick quarter, half inch, but again, it's going to be very, very spotty and many areas not getting a drop. So after that, though, most of the next week, we're looking pretty dry with temperatures in the 80s and 90s next week. And I don't see a wet pattern anytime soon. I do see wetter weather possible by the end of the month into the first week of August. But other than that, we got a dry stretch of about 10 to 14 days across much of the area as the main storm track kind of lines up into the central plains and into the Great Lakes, leaving much of the northern plains on the dry side.
Depending on where we have planting dates for our corn right now, if you want to look at where we're staging corn out at, we are probably at tasseling for a fair amount. So that's ear and tassel formation is currently going on. Then we're going to move into silking. That's the reproductive stage. So we move from the vegetative stage, what we call the V stages, to the reproductive, the R stages, and that we'll be moving into silking. And that's when those silks are receptive to pollen. After we move through silking, we'll start to see the blister and milk stage going on in corn. As far as our soybeans are concerned at this point in time, we are looking at what's probably, you know, it's mid-July. We're in that mid to late, that V5 to VN, that late vegetative stage where we're getting maximum vegetative growth. We're branching out. And there are some flowers starting to form here as we get closer to early August. That's our beginning bloom. Will we see more plants bloom if we get rain? If we get rain and our soybeans aren't doing great, there is an opportunity for them to rebloom and try to put some more pods on if that's possible. A concern I have as we go into this drier situation and we start to worry about going through late July and into August dry that's usually when we start to see pests show up. In particular, in soybeans, we could be seeing soybean aphids and spider mites. Haven't had any reports of those yet, but we'll keep an eye on the NSU crop and pest report to see if any of those do show up. With sweltering heat and drought going on in France, their corn crop is likely going to be the smallest in 50 years. That's another blow to this European production after their cereals were acres were cut back on planting. Their Grain Trade Association has cut its outlook for European corn production by about 8%, taking it down to 52 million metric tons. That's the lowest since 2007. That was already after a 7% cut in production that was forecasted by their commodity data firms. And both forecasters are saying weather damage in France and Hungary is affecting what's going on in the EU. France is in its third heat wave and has very little rain that's been going on as of late. So crop losses will likely mount and outweigh any boost they might have been able to give the European harvest, even though there was much needed rainfall in Romania. Russia has decided to ban diesel exports this week, and that has really caused some rolling in the global energy markets, in exacerbating shortages of industrial fuel and sent more prices soaring, even though countries could no longer buy fuel from Moscow. Diesel accounts for the largest share of their global oil consumption, and these soaring prices are rippling through the effects. Yesterday, one of the things that I learned at the Bell Bank Ag Views Live was that California, as the fifth largest global economy, imports a million gallons of oil per day. Texas is the sixth largest global economy. They have oil. Silly that somewhere down the line nobody thought maybe we should stick a pipeline in to get one to the other so we could sort of offset some of these imports that need to happen. But nope, haven't done that part yet. So I guess we weren't really thinking out loud with that situation happening. So much more going on as far as drought and weather extremes. I've got some things on that we'll want to catch up on hopefully tomorrow. And then we'll also talk about what's going on with the high crop input costs that are weakening our U.S. competition. There was recently a study done by National Corn Growers that compares what happens in the U.S. versus Brazil. It shows that Brazilian farmers, when you look at a active ingredient basis, when you're comparing it by actives, not by brand or trade names, you will find that you've got a disadvantage to what's happening in the Brazilian markets right now, making them not only number one in soybean exports, but they have also taken over the number one position in corn.
All right. Well, that'll do it for today's edition of Weather and Ag in Focus. Want to thank everybody for joining us, but don't go anywhere just yet. Jay Thomas Show, it's coming up next.